Morning decisions. A creamy mocha frappuccino drink, a sweet vanilla, maybe a smooth caramel, or that white chocolate mocha. Whichever you choose, delicious coffee awaits. Start your day with bottled Starbucks frappuccino drinks. Pick up a bottle near you wherever you buy your groceries.
The Pat Kenny Show
with Aviva Insurance
on News Talk.
Taoiseach Micheál Martin, you're very welcome to the studio.
Thank you, Pat.
It's been a tough week.
It has. It has been a very traumatic week for the nation, but particularly for the people of Chrysler. 10 people have lost their lives in a shocking accident. And when I went there at the weekend, I was very struck by the stories on each individual, but also the engagement I had with the first responders, with those in the fire brigade, the entire hospital of Letterkenny, and the scenes that greeted them that will stay with them for the rest of their lives. Yeah. And then the bond within the community itself. And watching yesterday, and we're now all week, we have the funerals, which brings the story of the people, of the families, of the individuals who have lost their lives. You know, at the weekend we had numbers and we were worried, but now you're yeah. really at a very raw level, seeing the impact on individual families and communities. Young Hamish struck me yesterday at two levels. The manner in which he spoke lovingly of his father, James, would break your heart. And then a resilience in that young boy in terms of it as well. Yeah. And what he said to us all is just continue to
cherish,
love your family when you have
what
them.
You have. Yeah, and you've been bereaved tragically yourself. So you know all about that, to cherish what you have while you can. Now, there is, a political issue attached to what happened in Chrysler. The fire services, I mean, they're not full-timers. They're not like the Dublin Fire Brigade.
No, they're not. And I was talking, because I spent the morning and Sunday morning with first responders, and particularly with what we called to the fire service. And we had that discussion. You know, we have retained fire services across the country. And I think we need to reflect on that too. They're in full-time jobs, and they're what we call a retained fire service. They get the alarm and they rush
they
to
drop
the scene.
Everything.
They drop everything. And they were there literally for 30 odd hours. You know, they went through the night. I would have met them on the Saturday evening, first of all, some of them at the mass and some of them at the scene. And then we had went to the station the following morning to say thanks, and we had a bit of
growth. And is this what county councils and indeed the Department of the Environment have got to look at?
I think we do have to look at it. I'm also struck by the impact this must have on them as individuals. This was their neighbours. These were their neighbours' community, and that, you know, they came upon the scenes at their most rawest. They came upon both injured but also deceased. And that's very, very hard. And that's something that has stayed with me for the entire week, was the individual stories they told me about where they found people. The chance nature of how people on the right side or the wrong side of a particular slab that fell, you know, meant the difference between life and death. A foot meant the difference between life and death.
Now, speaking of life and death, there are people who fled Ukraine. It was a matter of life and death. And then we saw what happened in Killarney, another difficult political hot potato for you to handle. Because if 135 people, women and children, are to be moved to Mayo, and that decision can be reversed literally overnight, it means it was a bad decision to begin with.
Well, I think we should never be afraid to say, you know, to correct a situation. Although I will say, and I want to pay tribute to Minister Roderick O'Gorman and the entire team at the Department of Children, they're faced with very, very difficult choices now because of the enormous pressure on the system, not just because of the war of Ukraine, although 53,000 people have come in this year from Ukraine, 41,000 seeking accommodation. 11,000 have come in under the international protection route and seeking international protection. And that's expected to go to 15,000 by the end of the year.
Yeah. Now, why are we...
We're expecting 3,500 to 4,000.
Yeah. So why are we being targeted? And that may be a word that you don't like, but being targeted by people, are we seen as a soft touch? Are we seen as, you know, the people who will step up to the plate, live up to our international responsibilities and welcome people in for processing? And they know, if they do any kind of research at all, it might take years to be processed here, by which time, you know, you've settled, you've got children who have all the rights of Irish citizens.
Well, it's not just Ireland. This is actually a European-wide phenomenon. I think more fundamentally, it's about world conflict in the world, drought, climate. And I was at the UN about 3 weeks ago. I came away a bit down, to be frank, in terms of the state of the world. And, you know, the Horn of Africa in deep trouble, Sahel in
and we're hearing deep, this deep morning trouble. About the number of people who are starving, literally, on yes. the verge of famine in certain countries.
Conference before I came here, the Food Vision conference.
Going back to
an international speaker from the UN just spoke, war tongue has gone way back up again. This is all problematic. So I think that's causing the more fundamental issues of migration flows.
But you're wondering why Europe. People from Georgia, for example, which is not on the danger list, why they'd make their way all the way across Europe and fetch up without papers, maybe at Dublin Airport. 40% of the people arriving at Dublin Airport have no papers. How do they get on the planes?
There are fair questions there, and I think analysis has to, and analysis continues to go into the composition and the nature of, you know, why the sudden surge and so forth. There's no doubt there's problems around the world which is leading to this.
But the people who are chancing their arm are depriving someone who desperately needs our welcome from that welcome.
Yes. And then again, that speaks to the robustness of our international protection system that is able to identify the genuine situations from that may be not so genuine. But the pressures are enormous, and it led to the kind of decisions because, let's be frank about it, in terms of international protection, not every facility is making itself available for those in international protection.
But one hotel in seven being used for international protection, be it Ukrainians or people from other parts of the world, that doesn't seem to be sustainable.
Well, we're in a wartime situation, unfortunately. This is the worst humanitarian crisis on the continent of Europe since World War II. And that has impacts. It's difficult to insulate any society in Europe from the impacts of such a war. And it's a big worry and remains a very big concern for us. The continuation of that war, the consequential impacts in terms of migration, in terms of famine, and in terms of energy prices.
But even from a politician's point of view, you're looking at this, we have our own people who are desperately looking for homes, and then you've got the equally just cries for help from Ukrainians and other refugees to have a roof over their heads. It can be politically dangerous for you know, that certain forces might get to work, which would become anti-immigrant, anti-refugee, anti-asylum seeker. And we don't want that kind of attitude to grow in Ireland.
That is a real danger. And I think Michael Clifford has written an article in the Irish Examiner just on that topic. And I think it's a very fair, accurate presentation of the issues. In other words, you know, you look at what's happening in different countries around Europe now, and far right parties are gaining ascendancy or gaining stronger traction, put it that way, than would have been the case heretofore. And migration is the potent electoral and political weapon of some
but
parties.
But are we likely to have to suspend entry to people looking for our help?
No, I don't believe so.
I mean, it was a warning sounded yesterday in that statement about the Hotel Killarney.
There are issues. I mean, there's no question. Well, the warning, I think, was fundamentally more about City West in terms of that is reaching its limits in terms of what we can take in terms of the City West facility. There is some work going on in reconfigurations of buildings and so on, but, you know, it is becoming very, very challenging. I'm not going to deny that. It is. And we will be meeting again. We're engaging on a continuous basis at ministerial level. And different departmental level to deal with this.
I think the problem exacerbated by the housing crisis that even when people get the right to stay, their refugee status is confirmed, but they have to stay in direct provision because
centers,
they can't afford, with whatever job they might get, to house themselves?
My sense is that is a further issue. I mean, there's quite a number of people now, a couple of thousand people in direct provision who could leave direct provision.
If they could fend for themselves.
If they could fend for them, if they could get housing and get access to housing.
But they would simply go on the housing list, the social housing
list.
That's
the point, yeah. And therefore, what we need is, in my view, we have to have faster delivery systems. I think our systems are too slow, given the nature of the crisis that we're experiencing at all levels, both the housing crisis, the migratory pressures, and the pressure on accommodation, full stop.
Now, there are temporary solutions. For example, you know, there are the containers that can be turned into small apartments, and that has been done. There's one, I think, on display in Nace, and they can be used very successfully and very sustainably into the future. Why are we not looking at things like that? I mean, I heard Regina Doherty, Senator, talking yesterday about, you know, modular building as if it was something that would blow away in a puff of wind, you know, that they would be only temporary for 2 or 3 years. These kind of houses can last a lifetime.
Yes, modular housing has a 40 to 50 year lifespan. particularly the ones we are now investing in via the OPW, about 500, we want constructed. But again, the system is too slow in responding to innovation. I've pushed...
But you are the system.
You are
the government.
I'm pushing it. That's why we're having 500 bill pass. But I've just been honest with people. We have to deliver far more. I think we need modular. We need more timber frame. We have to not always be fixated on the conventional type of house building. The modular homes... happening all over Europe. They've been built all over.
I mean, the student accommodation, which stacks containers in Holland, that's what they do. And, you know, there's not the place that you want to raise your children in necessarily, but it's pretty good for housing students for, you know, half the 7-8 months of the year.
Yes, but I think we can do better on student accommodation. I think there was a good wave of accommodation built.
If students go into that kind of accommodation, it frees up the other accommodation
for
families.
Yeah, exactly.
Moving on to the girls in green, I know on the one hand, it's like a game of two halves. Congratulations. We had Amber Barrett on the programme yesterday, a wonderful young woman who scored the goal, and Vera Pau came on as well. And then the other thing broke about Up the Ra, and it has tarnished, really, what was a magnificent win.
It was a magnificent win. It was a magnificent performance. I said it myself afterwards, you know, discipline, sort of resilience, strength, organisation. It was just incredible for 96 minutes. That speaks of, I think, a good character in that team. And they delivered an outstanding result. And
now, what did you make of then what happened in the dressing room was put on social media?
Well, I think to be fair, I don't believe any malice was intended here at all. These things can happen. What really has struck me is the speed and totality of the apology, the very comprehensive nature of that
apology.
But
what is it telling you about, you know, they're the young voters, and we know that Sinn Féin and the polls are attracting young voters in great numbers. It does, it's not even amnesia, because they have no memory to forget of the troubles. But it does seem as if a cohort of young people don't know what it means to shout Up the Ra, have no memory at all of Enniskillen or of any of the atrocities that happened at the hands of the so-called Ra.
Yeah, I think we need to be careful to make that sort of read across in terms of what happens in a dressing room with people, a tune comes up and people sing the tune to political issues or how people are going to vote or all of that. I think we have to be careful in making that sort of read across to that. I think on that broader level, there is an issue in terms of the past, in terms of IRA violence and so on, more generally in society, that we need to be very clear about. And I think Sinn Féin itself needs to be clear about. And again, when, you know...
But they will say that was then, we have the peace process, we reached agreements, etc., even though they were outside the tent for much of that process, led by the likes of John Hume. But still, they will say that was then. Fianna Fáil had a violent tradition, Fine Gael had a violent tradition. So we've left our past behind.
Well, by the way, I won't go into history, but Fianna Fáil left that violent tradition. We didn't ourselves, in the sense that we were a move on from the Civil War and that we wanted a new politics at the time in the 1920s. But the point is, when I visit Enniskillen, I visit it every year on behalf of the Irish people and the Irish government, you are struck by what happened there. And we need to develop a culture more generally in society around violence as a means of achieving political ends. When we celebrate or commemorate 100 years, I do so in a much more honest way now. And I think we need to take the culture of the gun out of Irish politics, and we need to do that in a very open way. And every political party needs to contribute to that. And, you know, we have a strong parliamentary tradition in Ireland as well, going way back. So that's the broader story in terms of the past. And I'm very clear. I read a book recently by Patrick Radden O'Keefe, Say Nothing. And what that brought across, because that was about the Boston Tapes and protagonists that were involved in violence. Mm-hmm. And what comes across is the futility of the entire 30 years from those who were at the heart of it and their disillusionment with the whole thing. But the number of lives that were lost as a result of all of that.
Now, what about the Shane Ross controversy and the dropping of an interview on the Claire Byrne Show on RT Radio and the fact that you maintained, I think in the Dáil yesterday, that Sinn Féin may have been shown or got access to the content of that interview and RT dropped it. RT and Sinn Féin have denied they ever had any access to the copy. So did you get it wrong?
Yeah, I got that wrong in terms of the access. I said that, by the way, I said apparently, I understand. It was a very quick...
Yeah, but it wasn't true.
It was a very quick interchange with Paul Keogh, who raised it, asked me in relation to it. The key point I was making is that when political parties, when people start suing the national broadcaster, it does have a chilling effect. And it's a bit hard to look at the Shane Ross saga in isolation and to say there's no connection between that and the fact that RTÉ are being sued and that there's a defamation case against them. It does have a chilling effect on media and on broadcasters. And
they might say, well, we're just being careful. We have editorial control. We can make a decision.
Sinn Féin are suing a lot now. They're suing politicians. They're suing media. And I think the agenda there is they don't want people talking about what happened to Muireann Cahill. They don't want people talking about their past. And so, and there's a really, this is a coordinated strategy by Sinn Féin across the board. I reference, so Sinn Féin can attack other political parties about appointments and so on like that. But if you attack Sinn Féin about appointments in Northern Ireland, you'll get a solicitor's letter, or you'll get letters left, right and centre. And it can't be, you know, one rule for Sinn Féin and different rules for everybody else. It's not a healthy development, the degree to which a political party, if you like, on almost a serial basis at this stage, coordinated basis, seeks to shut down debate on legitimate issues in terms of how people who were raped within a particular movement were dealt with. And that's these are legitimate issues that need to be discussed, not shut down.
Your predecessor as Taoiseach, Fianna Fáil Taoiseach, was Albert Reynolds, and he said it's the small things that get you. And small things, they may appear, the concrete block levy, for instance, energy vouchers for holiday homes. I mean, are these things that you could have avoided with a little more deft politics?
Well, on the first case, look, first of all, it's an 11-point-odd billion budget. We were focusing on giving people supports predominantly in this to get them over the energy crisis. And there's a whole range of payments will go out to people between now and the end of the year to try and help them deal with the bills that they have. On the concrete levy issue, we decided back in November, actually before the budget, that there would have to be a revenue stream to match what is extraordinary expenditure.
It's small though, 80 million out of several billion maybe at the end of the day.
But it's saying to an industry and it's saying to the world in general, look, when something like this happens in a given sector, there has to be a means of recovering revenue in terms of ensuring it doesn't happen again, in terms of behaviour, but also in terms of making a contribution to the likely cost. Now, the cost will take time to build up, I acknowledge that. So the MICA costs, because obviously there's lots of preparatory work in terms of houses that have to be refurbished, repaired or knocked down and rebuilt again. That's about 2.7 billion, we reckon. And then you have another, you have the pirate, and then you have the apartment defects, which could be anything up to
But at 80
billion.
Million a year, you're talking about 30 years payback.
And I take your point on that. And in the finance bill, as I said, November was prior to war, but we followed through in the budget with it. We'll look at this in the context of the finance bill, and we're conscious of what people are saying to us.
Now, the energy vouchers, welcome by everybody, but why should holiday homes get it? I mean, I don't know, I was thinking about this, saying, how would I handle it? And I thought, well, I time limit the vouchers. So if you're not using your holiday home in the winter and you don't use your voucher, it dies. It's time stamped. So therefore, you don't pay it if you don't use it. Use it or lose it.
What the department are saying to us, it's not. It's just not from an administrative point of view.
No, but I mean, if it's applied to your bills and you don't accrue those bills, the voucher dies.
That's something that can be looked up at. But
I think it should.
But the department are very clear with us that they can't differentiate that simply. Yeah. That's the point. And this is a universal measure. You see, a lot of our measures are targeted, but there's a general view within government and across the Oireachtas that there had to be a general measure as well to cover the entire population, because everybody's feeling it to some degree or another. What is sacrificed by a universality of a measure is precision in terms of targeting.
Everything in Ireland is too slow, says a texter. Housing, student accommodation, EV charging points, public transport, offshore wind, community medical centres, and on and on and on. The public delivery system is inefficient and sclerotic. That's from John in Limerick. There is an element of that. I mean, we saw that Shell pulled out because of the regulation regime that is being put in place. They say it's easier for us to do offshore wind somewhere else. And that applies to a lot of situations. We saw Revolut pulled out because the central bank was too slow.
Well, we have asked, and there is work underway on a very comprehensive overview of the planning system from the Department of Housing and the Attorney General, and a team were brought in to look really comprehensively at the entire planning code. That needs to happen. I make no mistake, I'm 2 years and a bit now as Taoiseach. I think that the system is too slow. I am impatient with it. I think housing is a big crisis. And we are analysing ourselves at times, over-analysing every single decision at different layers.
Because you did say we're in a war situation and therefore things have got to be different.
But I found COVID refreshing, because in COVID we did things. We had to. And we had to respond in an unprecedented way, both economically, which worked, and also in terms of dealing with the public health threat itself.
The other thing, and I go back to one of our earlier issues, that about the Hotel Killarney. And I was just wondering, what kind of individual, is it a minister or is it an official, makes the decision to uproot Ukrainian families, children who were in school, some Ukrainians in jobs in Killarney, and shove them up to Westport? Nothing wrong with Westport, I hasten to add. But you know what I mean? Why would you do it to people? Why
because
would you?
The choice facing that official or that, basically is homelessness for one group, they'd be on the streets.
But because they reversed it and have found homes
they found,
in Killarney.
They found, yeah. And
so why didn't they do that in the first place?
Because what was available subsequently was not immediately available prior, is my understanding. But again, you do have to take lessons from that. But the more important point is, too, there are positives in that as well in terms of the community response in Killarney, which, like, you know, the fact that the Ukrainian families have settled in, the school principals coming out saying, you know, these children now are our children in the sense that we've helped them progress in learning.
The officials should have known all of that.
There are a lot of positives. Look, I think my own view is, and I'm very clear about this, women and children need to be looked after, particularly children. Their development can be upset, they're already very traumatized by what has happened in terms of having to leave. Their fathers are back at home. There's a war situation there. We have to be careful in terms of how children are managed.
Minimize the trauma,
Minimize the trauma for children, yeah.
Finally, you mentioned 2.5 years of Taoiseach. It's coming to an end. What then?
We'll become tarnished then. What's holding the government together is the programme for government. We're focused on policies and issues.
I'm really thinking a little bit further down the stream. I mean, you will probably have to say that you lead Fianna Fáil into the next election because otherwise you become a lame duck and, you know, the knives will be sharpened in your own party, never mind everywhere else. I'm thinking someone with your experience, young yet, Europe beckons, maybe.
Well, first of all, I think I'm very focused on the current issues, Pat. We just discussed them, the crisis generally with war, inflation, energy costs. So I'm not focusing beyond this government because it's hard work making sure we can go to full term. And I think my own view.
But the best job in the country, you will then give up. And, looking at the polls, it doesn't look like there'll be a Fianna Fáil Taoiseach for quite some time, shall we say.
I wouldn't accept that, by the way.
But take my hypothesis that there won't be. And, you know, the only game in town is wielding effective power. So is there another forum in which you'd like to labour?
Well, I haven't considered that at all. But what I would say to you is this, that I think what we're doing now at the end of the year is important for politics in general. I think humility is important. I think it's important that people can see that three parties can form a government based on policies and that, yes, I will move from the position of Taoiseach to Tánaiste if everything goes according to the plan. And that's a good thing too, you know, that it's not all about ego or yourself. It's about getting the policies right for the people as best we can.
Taoiseach Micheál Martin, thank you very much for joining us in studio today.
Thank you, Pat. Thank you very much indeed.
The Pat Kenny Show
with Aviva Insurance.
Weekdays at 9 a.m. on News Talk.
First decision of the morning. A creamy mocha frappuccino drink? Or will we ease into the day with a sweet vanilla? Maybe a smooth caramel? Ooh, what about that white chocolate mocha? No matter which flavor you choose, delicious coffee awaits. Better coffee starts a better day. Start with bottled Starbucks Frappuccino drinks. Pick up a bottle near you wherever you buy your groceries.